From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. August 25th, 2017, Hurricane Harvey makes landfall on the Texas Gulf Coast.
It started at 2 a.m.
It's an overwhelming amount of rain.
We have a new all-time record now for rainfall from a tropical system.
And we were in our house until it got to about mid-thigh.
51.88 inches.
It's too much for the first responders. You know, they need help.
I'm honestly at a loss for words.
You just gotta look out for everybody.
I'm a single mom with three girls, so, you know, to see our life literally float away, in a sense, I gotta swallow it and keep going.
More than 50 inches of rain, more than 20 trillion gallons of water, trillion with a T, upwards of 200,000 swamped homes, and dozens killed across Harris County. Well, it's been a year, and many Houstonians are still suffering, still waiting for their lives and their city to make a complete recovery. Here's Mayor Sylvester Turner's message to them last week.
You are not forgotten. We are still focusing on your situation. And we are not going to leave you where you have been over the past year.
It will take Houston many more years to fully come back from Harvey's devastation. It'll cost billions of dollars. Now, some of that money is on the way, but will it be enough? And is there a cohesive long-term plan to help Houston hold back the water? The one thing we know for sure, more major rain events will hit the city. This hour On Point, a year after Harvey, Houston's path to recovery and resilience, and lessons for every American city. You can join us. How are you affected by Harvey? And if you weren't directly affected, how are you preparing your town, your city, for the next natural climate-driven disaster where you live? What does it take to be a resilient city today, and are we really ready and up for the challenge in terms of money and in terms of planning? What lessons do you think we can draw from Houston's current challenges? You can join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, let's go straight to Houston to get started. And joining us today is Reverend James Caldwell. He's the founder of the Coalition of Community Organizations and a longtime activist in Houston neighborhoods, including the Fifth Ward and Cashmere Gardens. Reverend Caldwell, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Mega.
Thank you so much for joining us today. So give us a snapshot. Produce this visual picture for us, for those of us who aren't in Houston. What are some of the neighborhoods that you serve? What do they look like today?
It's a slow process. Recovery will take probably about 2 to 3 years for communities to get back to normal, if there's such a thing as normal.
2 to 3 years, meaning lots of folks still living in FEMA trailers, houses still, what, stripped down to the studs?
Houses stripped down to the studs. The FEMA trailers are pretty much gone, okay. But there are a lot of displaced residents. And those residents who, long-term residents who moved back into their community, but still need a lot of repair work done. There still needs to be a lot of rebuilding. There are homes that still, you can sit in their living room and look to their bedroom because their walls haven't been replaced. And of course, carpets or even floors and foundations, all of the above, and roofs as well. So we're in the process of trying to address that. And that is a long-term process.
So how are people getting by?
A lot of grassroots organizations, such as myself, are trying to do the footwork. Well, I guess we're basically the foot soldiers. Of course, we work in conjunction with some of the major organizations. And that's just primarily to address the overall concern. As you probably know, and the nation may know, Harvey did not discriminate. It touched everybody. And this process will be ongoing, and it will take some time.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. Mother Nature doesn't care, right? She drops the natural disasters wherever she wants. But it's how we recover that really sort of shows the stark differences in people's access to aid, to, you know, how much their communities can give, things like that. I mean, I've been seeing report after report that says there are neighborhoods in Houston that are struggling mightily, whereas others with higher incomes and different zip codes may be, you know, closer to normal now.
That is true. The difference, as I mentioned, Harvey did not discriminate, but the difference between one neighborhood and the other in Houston, because, you know, Houston is a sprawling city, is the income inequality. In some neighborhoods, the income is, well, their bank accounts may have 6 or 7 digits. In others, it's 2 or 3. And their ability to recover financially is at a greater strain than it is some communities.
Yeah. I want to talk with you for a second about sort of all the different ways in which Harvey touched people. I mean, we talked about homes, obviously. That's of primary importance. But I'm saying here that some, like, is this right? Like, 500,000 cars were also damaged or washed away. And I imagine for a lot of Houstonians, not having your car cuts you off from making a livelihood of any kind.
Yeah, absolutely right. Houston, as I mentioned, is about, I believe it's about 30 miles from one side of town to the other. And not having means of transportation is a great disparity. Many of those who were affected and who lost their cars lost their jobs in the process. So the source of income was gone, as a matter of fact. And so they had to try to find another means to find employment. Because without transportation, of course, immediately after the storm, it took a while to clean the roads and highways just to be able to get to work. So that is a burden within itself. When you think of all the other aspects, the psychological, emotional, financial, and the just overall ability to get back to a way of life here in Houston. But there are many other factors that contribute to not just the loss of vehicles, but just the ability to, for one, to sustain a normal way of life.
Reverend Caldwell, you're a lifelong Houstonian, right?
Yes.
Had you ever seen anything like this?
Not in my life. I recently had a birthday. I turned 65. So out of 65 years, I've never seen nothing like this. I was here for Allison. I was here for all of the others. I can even remember Carla. And I've never seen nothing like this before. I saw some sights and some things that I don't want to see anymore. And I hope that no one else has to see them before. As you mentioned, that was loss of life. But there was also a lot of pain, a lot of misery, a lot of suffering, a lot of despair. And it's not just trying to recover individuals financially or restore them back. But now you have to deal with the psychological and the emotional aspect of it. Saw a young lady with her father who a father had to hand her out of a two-story building, their home, to firemen and policemen in a boat. So that's, you know, and she was just terrified. She did not want to go back into her home. But that's just one of many, many stories here in Houston that one could tell and share.
I mean, I'm reading here that some officials who've been traveling around Harris County in the past couple of months are saying that it's literally like a case of countywide PTSD a year later.
This is so true. It is so true. We have a lot of seniors. We have a lot of disabled, especially in our communities and really in all communities. And trying to address the emotional aspect of that, the psychological aspect of that. If I've, out of my 65 years, if I've never seen anything like that, I'm sure that they haven't. And the impact psychologically and emotionally that it had on them, I'm sure it's going to take some while for them to recover.
Yeah. Reverend Caldwell, one more question. I mean, and I'm leaning on your experience here as a lifelong Houstonian. You know, Harvey was a major hurricane. It parked itself over the Gulf Coast for several days. But the truth is we're going to see more weather events like this. That's the only thing we know for sure. So, I mean, do you think Houston can get ready? It can become a resilient city and can withstand all that, you know, climate change is going to throw at it.
Well, you hit it on the head. Climate change will definitely be an issue. Yes, there will be another Harvey. We don't know when, where, or how. But the answer, from my perspective, is being prepared for it beforehand. One of the things that we're doing within our community is communities working with communities in the event that such a disaster occurs again. And also preparing the long-term aspect of it, the resiliency process, preparing for that and being able to overcome it and still sustain a way of life afterward. We just recently passed a $2.5 billion bond here, and we're in the process of trying to make sure that that money is equitably, there are three aspects that we're trying to address, the equity aspect, the affordability aspect, and the resiliency aspect, because we've had residents here who have endured Ike, who endured Allison, and now they have to deal with Harvey. Mm-hmm. And that needs to be infrastructure issues that needs to be addressed, and all of the above, drainage issues, so that the next event, such as a Harvey, will not have such an impact. As you mentioned earlier, Mother Nature is ruthless. She does not care. But we have to be prepared for the onslaught that Mother Nature may bring to us.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned that bond vote that happened on Saturday this week, and $2.5 billion, Harris County voters overwhelmingly approved that. We're going to talk about that more a little bit later in the show. But Reverend Caldwell, do you think that Houstonians, I mean, quite frankly, anyone along the Gulf Coast, that, you know, that you've got to look towards, is it local effort? Is it state effort? Is it federal level effort? I mean, where is the sort of heart of the solution going to come from? Especially since you rightly pointed out, like, if and when the money comes, there's all these important decisions that have to happen between, you know, for getting the money out equitably to all the diverse neighborhoods of Houston. How is that going to happen?
Well, it's going to take all efforts, all the ones that you mentioned, as well as the community effort. But for me as a minister, the primary objective is there has to be a degree of compassion, a degree of understanding, a degree of desire and willingness to, as during the storm itself, there was this brotherhood, this brotherly love expressed from one community to the other. We had individuals coming from out of town and across town and everywhere to try to assist us. And that effort needs to be maintained and sustained if we're going to be able to address the next Harvey issue. But there must be some compassion. There has to be a degree of love attached to this. And that has to be a brotherly love. We have to put aside a lot of all of our ideas and ideologies and all of the above and recognize that we're all humans. We're all God's children.
Well, Reverend James Caldwell, founder and director of Coalition for Community Organizations. He's obviously a reverend and an activist in Houston's Fifth Ward in the Cashmere Gardens neighborhood. Thank you so very much, Reverend. And we really are pulling for you and everyone you work with there in Houston. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Megan, for having me.
We'll be back with a lot more about looking at Houston 1 year after Harvey and lessons for the entire country on climate resilience. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We do long-form interviews with the people behind the best books, pop culture, journalism, and more, so you can get to know the people whose work you love. You'll find Fresh Air on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about Houston and its road to recovery and climate resilience 1 year after Hurricane Harvey dumped an unprecedented amount of rain on the nation's fourth largest city, put Houston underwater for what seemed like an interminable period of time. I mean, let's listen back to some of the experiences from last year. Louise Walker, she spoke with CNN last year from her neighbor's apartment during the flooding in August. The water in her own first floor apartment was waist deep.
We have people that have, who are living in these first floor apartments like I have. They have been breaking into empty second level apartments just to have somewhere to go because we can't get out. We're completely surrounded with water. We can't get out of our apartment complex. No one can come in, and we're just stuck here.
Well, a year later, we're asking, what is it going to take to make Houston completely climate resilient? Is that even possible? And what lessons should the rest of the nation take from Houston's challenges right now? Well, joining us now again from Houston is Andrew Schneider, reporter for Houston Public Media. We last spoke with him a year ago from his neighborhood as it was flooding. Andrew, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Jim Blackburn. He is director of the Severe Storm Prevention, Education, and Evacuation from Disaster Center. He's a professor of environmental law and civil and environmental engineering at Rice University. He's with us from Houston as well. Professor Blackburn, welcome to you.
Good to be here, Magna. Thank you.
Well, first of all, Andrew, let me start with you. We talked with you a year ago. How are things for you? And how would you say things are for Houston as it's trying to recover a year later?
Well, even as last year, I hesitate to talk about how things are for me because I know that there were people around Houston and up and down the Texas Gulf Coast who had things far worse. We've still got, as the Reverend said earlier, a lot of people who are out of their homes, a lot of people who have gone back to their homes, but only because they can't afford to go anywhere else. But I think part of the thing that tends to get missed, and this is something you alluded to earlier, is what you don't see, what you only get from talking to people, which is that there are a lot of people around the Houston area that even if they've managed to rebuild, they're still scarred by the experience. Mm-hmm. They've still got a form of PTSD. I know that the first time that we had a major storm after Harvey had taken place, I certainly wasn't the only one who experienced this, but I definitely had something akin to a panic attack. And for people that actually did lose their homes and people who lost loved ones or their life's work, even after the entire city is put back together, which is still going to be the work of years, they're going to be living with that experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, so let's talk about what's being done in the recovery. And again, as you said, and everyone who is in Houston knows, I mean, this is going to be a years-long process, as you just said. But thus far, I'm seeing here that FEMA has given out some $13 billion in funds for folks recovering from Harvey. And now, whether or not that those funds have been equitably distributed is still a point of pretty significant debate, and I want to acknowledge that. But I did promise folks that we would talk about this bond measure that was passed overwhelmingly on Saturday, $2.5 billion that Harris County voters themselves voted for Harvey recovery. What is that money meant to do?
That money is meant to deal with the most urgent flood control needs. In other words, things like trying to widen bayous that had been some of the worst choke points during the flood. It's trying to build out stormwater detention basins. It's trying in some cases, although not nearly enough, to accommodate voluntary buyouts for people whose homes are just too deep in any floodplain for any of these flood control measures to help them. Unquestionably, it's going to make a difference. And the support for the bond measure was really overwhelming.
Yeah.
The vote passed by something like 85% to 15%, which for any kind of bond measure in Harris County is extremely strong. But even the supporters of this have gone on record as saying, again, this is just for the most urgent needs to deal with all of the county's flood control needs. It's probably going to take somewhere to in the neighborhood of 10 times that or more, and it's likely to take a good deal longer to get the funds, much less to do the work.
Right. I was seeing here that Houston Public Media, your very organization, has said that estimates are putting the total amount needed for comprehensive projects, and that's, let's underscore that, at more than $30 billion. So, Professor Blackburn, this is where I turn to you. I mean, climate resilience is, a years-long plan in the making. Ideally, what would you like to see Houston do to be able to withstand another Harvey?
Well, I think there's three aspects that are very important, one of which is passing the local bond issue, which we had done overwhelmingly, so that we have money to undertake sort of the immediate kind of short-term action, as Andrew was saying. I think, though, that more in a broader sense, we've got an issue of vision, I think. We have to think of ourselves a little differently going forward. We're going to see more Harveys. We're going to see more Allisons, these huge storm events. We're next to the Gulf of Mexico. The Gulf is heating up. We're going to see more severe storms coming. And so we need to get used to living with water, which means that it's a, you know, we have tried over the years to banish water from the community, stick it in underground channels, stick it in concrete channels. The water is demanding more space. So I think we're going to have to buy out the worst of the flood victims. We're going to have to find replacement housing, which from an equity standpoint is one of the huge issues. And then we're going to have to learn to live with water. Mm-hmm. I think that's one thing.
Well, can I just jump in here? Because there's a comment that's come into our website, onpointradio.org, and someone calling themselves Hefe68 has written that one underlying cause of the flooding in events like Harvey is that developers and town officials in Harris County have for years advocated the development of wetlands and prairies around the city, prairie land around the city. That these are lands that had long been, you know, natural absorption areas for rainwater. And so they're asking, I'm not sure how this can be fixed, but the next hurricane or tropical storm is going to more or less have similar outcomes if those grasslands are gone.
Well, part of that is, frankly, turning those grasslands back into grasslands and wetlands. That's what making more space for the water in this town is all about. Also, we do have some left on the west side of town. We need to protect that in probably very creative ways, like maybe paying landowners to store floodwaters for us. There may be some very creative things to be done, but the point that the caller makes is just incredibly important. We have covered up a lot of natural storage areas. We had a wonderful sponge around this area. It's always flooded, but we have made our problem worse. We've got to keep from hurting ourselves more as we move forward, and we're going to have to reverse some of that damage. We've got some latent problems that it's going to take a while to deal with, and that's going to be one of the issues about vision. Mm-hmm. We need to see a different way forward. I would stress another thing is information. We don't tell the truth about a lot of these issues. We don't talk about climate change in this part of the world. We don't talk about the floodplains are dangerous, and they've always been considered red tape for development as opposed to really truly dangerous places to live.
Yeah.
There's things like that.
Okay. Well, I want to turn back to Andrew Schneider here for a second. Andrew, I mean, Houston is one of the fastest growing cities in the nation, right? It's on track to be larger than Chicago sometime soon. I mean, I hear Jim Blackburn saying, you know, these essential grasslands, these natural places where water gets absorbed ought to be protected. I mean, is that realistic for a booming city like Houston?
I think it's not so much a question of whether it's realistic. It's a question of how we do it, because the fact of the matter is, if we continue to have events like this, if we try and disregard the limits that nature places on the growth, in the end, it's likely to discourage people from coming here. I mean, I think that's a major concern for our elected officials.
I mean, just to show how deep that concern is, wasn't there recently a regulation passed for homes in certain flood areas or flood-prone areas to be lifted a little bit? But even that got that one measure got a lot of pushback from developers and landowners.
Yes, okay. Yeah, and we saw that both at the you know, in terms of city ordinance, the city ordinance that was passed by the Houston City Council and also by the Harris County Commissioner's Court. And the reality is that Houston has always been a very development-friendly place. That's been one of its keys to its success, certainly the largest city in the country that doesn't have any zoning ordinances. But that has also left the city vulnerable,
yeah,
to exactly the kinds of flooding that we've seen, because people have been able to build in areas that are vulnerable.
I want to get a call here quickly on just that point. Loretto is calling from Abita Springs, Louisiana. You're on the air. Hi, Loretto. Go ahead.
Hi, Magna.
Yeah, I'm here with you. Go ahead.
Yes. Hey. I've just the person online said basically what I was going to say is that development practices and the allowance of filling of wetlands is a great problem here. And parishes like mine have something called a no-net fill ordinance, which means that you can fill your land to the highest existing point. So developers can develop along the rivers and And the Corps of Engineers is complicit because they have to, people have to apply for a 404 to fill the wetlands, and they're granted almost continuously. And I just wonder, you know, when are people really going to admit that it's land use and development practices that have caused this?
Mm. Loretto, thank you so much for your call. Jim Blackburn, you have a quick response for her?
Sure. I think those, I mean, what she raised is absolutely correct. We have the same problem in Houston throughout. I think, again, it's a question of sort of vision and ethic about going forward. I do think it's possible that we can change, but it's going to take a community consensus. I've got to say, everyone coming together like we did on the bond issue indicates what can be done. I mean, we had a bipartisan effort to really roll up our sleeves. We addressed transparency and equity for the first time. It was a historic kind of call for an election in that we had protections there. I think you're going to see a similar type of effort made over time to change the way Houston sees itself. But it won't be easy, but I'm optimistic it can be done.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. Jim Blackburn, I want to follow up with something that Andrew Schneider was telling us a minute ago, and that is, is it possible that the very keys to Houston's success thus far, low taxes, low regulation, pro-growth, are exactly the things that you're talking about that are those are the things that need to be changed? Because I'm seeing here, you've been previously quoted that this first year after Harvey hasn't produced a definitive concept of what a flood-resilient Houston will look like. And that's an astonishing thing to hear of someone, you know, of your expertise to say.
Well, I think it's absolutely true in the sense that we have a number of short-term fixes, but most are based on sort of our philosophy from the past. And that's fine. There's some immediate things that can and should be done. I think we were all in agreement about that. I think the real issue is, what does it look like going forward in the 21st century? I think Houston's at a crossroads. It will either be the leader in resilience thinking in the future, or it's going to be the first big failure on an international level. We got hit with a storm that no city in the world could have handled. On the other hand, this is what's coming. This is what the future is. We have to learn from it. I think what you'll find in Houston is that we may come up with the most creative solutions of any of the areas, because when we put our mind to it, we'll come up with our own ways if we can get basically a community working together. I have great hope for people coming together and working these issues out, but it's going to take a lot of hard work.
Let's go to Nate, who's calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You're on the air, Nate.
Hi, thank you very much for having me. And this is what I was originally going to say, so I'll get to the state governments, but it sounds like the developers are trying to turn their customers into future victims. But what I was actually going to call about is how in Texas, Florida, and in some less obvious ways, Wisconsin, all the governors' administrations have been suppressing and trying to cover up and end discussion of global warming, which is a terrible way to handle things. And Texas, I have not heard good things about their planning for the future in terms of global warming. And here in Wisconsin, our governor, and just after last week, we got global warming killed someone and did over $100 million in our state, which is small compared to the damages down there, but still. But our governor is trying to get reelected in part on this Foxconn plant being built. And when Foxconn's builders and planners were told, well, what are you guys going to do about increasing rainfall and floods that are coming with global warming, they actually refused to do anything or plan anything, because those were supposedly just projections.
Yeah.
And projections are what's hitting people right now.
Nate, thank you so much for your call. I got to take it back from you because I'm just mindful of the time here before we have to take a break. Andrew Schneider, let me turn that to you. I mean, Nate's asserting that there's a lack of political leadership here. I'm also seeing it, and check me on this, that Texas as a state doesn't actually have a statewide climate change plan. Is that right?
Not that I've seen. No, we do have a state climatologist who
who does seem more than aware of the problems, but as far as an actual policy to handle it, no, I think that we're very much in the same situation as Wisconsin there.
I mean, so are there challenges, are there sort of political and structural challenges for getting a cohesive, comprehensive resiliency plan for Harris County? Because if there's a lot of local government and a resistance to any intrusion from bigger government, how is that going to work?
With great difficulty, and I think Jim outlined a lot of the problems there. You know, for all the awareness of the problem that we see at the local level, and I would certainly say that this, you know, this is something that we're seeing cooperation on across the aisle, both in Houston and in Harris County. It doesn't work all the way up to the state level, and when it comes to not just setting the policies, but in terms of finding the money to actually put those policies into practice, we would need a comprehensive plan at the state level to help as well. Right now, that just doesn't exist.
Well, Andrew Schneider is a reporter for Houston Public Media. We last spoke with him a year ago when his neighborhood was flooding in Texas, in Houston, Texas. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us once again today.
Thank you for having me.
And we are talking about Houston and its road to recovery and resilience after Harvey. Again, Hurricane Harvey hit the city, hit the Gulf Coast of Texas exactly a year ago. And it's been, again, a year. How far has the city come along, and what lessons does Houston have for the rest of America in terms of what it's really going to take to be resilient to climate change in the 21st century? I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
I'm Linda Holmes. There's more stuff to watch these days than you can ever get to. That's why we make Pop Culture Happy Hour. Twice a week, we give you the lowdown on what's worth your time and what's not. Find Pop Culture Happy Hour on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking about Houston a year after Hurricane Harvey and lessons that this major American city has for the rest of us, for the rest of the country, about what it's really going to take to be climate resilient. We're joined today by Jim Blackburn. He is a professor of environmental law and civil and environmental engineering at Rice University. He's also director of the Severe Storm Prevention, Education, and Evacuation from Disaster Center. A little earlier in the show, we were talking about a recent $2.5 billion bond that voters in Harris County passed overwhelmingly on Saturday. It may be a tenth of what Houston really needs to be climate resilient. But here's Harris County Judge Ed Emmett speaking to a crowd on the day of the special election. He's a Republican. Again, he heads Harris County government. He campaigned with Democratic Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner in favor of the bond.
After all those days of rain, I think everybody in this room and everybody throughout the county, except for maybe a couple of curmudgeons that are out there, all said, we can't let this happen again. We've got to do something, and we've got to change.
The bond did pass overwhelmingly, but as we said, it might be a tenth of what Houston really needs. Now, NPR reported today about how many of the hazardous waste sites that flooded during Harvey are still there and still an issue. So this really speaks to the myriad types of concerns that Houstonians still face a year after Harvey. So people can't fish where they used to, and water pollution could be still contaminating parts of Houston. Here's Scott Jones with the Galveston Bay Foundation.
We're still looking at the very least at 3.5 years before this waste is removed, best case scenario. And I worry every summer, because if we get a hurricane with really high wind speeds, you can basically think of that as being caught in the middle of a washing machine agitator. So we've got to get this stuff out.
got to get that stuff out. But whether or not they can and how it'll be done is still an outstanding question. Jim Blackburn, I want to ask you briefly about sort of other plans that Houston or advocates in and around Houston are thinking of. I mean, we talked about the bond bill, which is going to hopefully do things like widening bayous and channels, excavating stormwater detention basins, buying back homes in flood-prone areas. Again, that's $2.5 billion. But I'm also seeing here that there's a group called Houston Stronger, or a plan called Houston Stronger, eight Houston area counties that want to build two new reservoirs entirely and fund a coastal barrier or a spine in Galveston County. That could be something like, what, $60 billion. Is that realistic at any time in the future?
Well, I think you're talking about several different specific types of projects. The reservoirs would be on the west side. The coastal spine would be on the east side.
Okay.
I do think that the reservoirs to the west, something is necessary on the west side to help. We have two wonderful reservoirs that the Corps of Engineers built that have been allowed to fall into disrepair. And we had two of the six most dangerous reservoirs in the country, according to the Corps of Engineers, when Harvey hit. And we had massive flooding around Attucks and Barker reservoirs, and we have to get those reservoirs repaired. We're finding that we might be able to dig out those reservoirs deeper, and that would avoid the need for one new reservoir at least. I think the key is to try to preserve the native prairie lands to the west, the wetlands to the west, and store water on those rather than building reservoirs. That seems to be, I think, the emerging consensus that we need to find a way to do that as best we can.
Yeah.
On the coast, though, there's a need for some type of barrier because Harvey did not have coastal surge flooding, and we are probably more vulnerable to coastal surge flooding, and the damages would be horrific if we had a big surge, and we have to come up with a solution there as well.
Well, Jim Blackburn, stand by for a second, because I'm delighted to welcome into this conversation Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner. He joins us from Houston. He's been the Democratic mayor of the city since 2016. Mayor Turner, welcome to On Point.
Well, thank you, and it's good to be with you and the listening audience.
All right. Well, it's really great to have you. I mean, just briefly, if you could, give us your view of your city a year later. Where would you like to focus your efforts on? What still is needed to be done to get Houston to be totally climate resilient?
Well, let me just say for individuals who were impacted by Harvey, especially those individuals in low income communities that were already on the margins, and the storm pushed them down even further. People with special needs, my senior population, and even middle income families who exhausted all their resources. A top priority of mine in this administration, of course, is housing. Mm-hmm. Housing is critically important because there are people that are still out of their homes, or people that are still in homes that need to be repaired or rebuilt. So that is a high priority. And I'm very grateful to various nonprofits and volunteers and faith-based organizations, companies who have stepped in to help repair, rebuild many of these homes.
Mayor Turner, can I just... I'm sorry. You were about to wait on the federal government here. So I was just about to say, and I'm pretty sure I've got this right, that the Texas General Land Office says that they're in the process of administering some $5 billion of federal funding from HUD right now. Is that right?
Dollars, but those dollars won't get here until about, they're saying, November at the earliest.
I see.
$1.14 billion of those dollars are allocated to the city of Houston. But those dollars have yet to arrive. This is, you know, we're now 1 year after Harvey, and we have many people who are still out of their homes or in homes that need to be repaired. So we all need to just move with the greatest degree of urgency. So that's important.
But I mean, how are you going to do that when you mean move with the greatest degree of urgency? Does that mean advocating for more money, the more immediately release of federal funds? What do you mean?
To get the money here as quickly as possible. I'm very grateful and appreciative to people who have contributed to the local relief funds, to nonprofits, to volunteers, faith-based organizations who have stepped up to repair thousands of homes already. But for that assistance, people would be in a worse situation. Having said that, the quicker these federal dollars can arrive, can come to the city, especially those dollars that are being dedicated towards housing, the better it will be for these individuals and families who are still displaced, are living in situations that are not good for their health. That's the point that I'm making. Mm-hmm. And so right now I'm being told that these federal dollars for housing are not going to arrive until about November. If it could be quicker, I would be delighted. Yeah. And these persons who are having to deal with their situation now would benefit if these dollars could arrive, you know, yesterday.
Right.
So that's the point that I'm making.
Mayor Turner, so, you know, this is the thing about these climate disasters, right? There's immediate problems that you got to solve, as you're saying, like we have to get people back into livable homes. And then there's those longer term solutions, which, you know, are just as hard, if not harder.
Well, you have to do both.
Yeah. And so I guess I'm saying, like, as you know, there are mayors across the country right now who are watching what Houston's going to do. And, you know, is Houston going to be able to build a barrier in the Gulf? Is Houston going to be able to build those? Is Harris County going to be able to build those additional reservoirs? I mean, for the long run, what would you like to see done?
Well, the mitigation should come before the disaster. Houston has done very well in bouncing back. But I don't want to say that without also taking note of the fact that there are people who are still dealing with a very bad situation. But you need to make a city or an area more resilient, stronger. And so it is important. This is the Bayou City, that we take steps to expand the bayous, that you put in more detention basins, that you provide more drainage and flooding. I do agree. I think I was hearing Jim Blackburn talking about maintaining the wetlands, do some additional dredging by the reservoir, put in place the coastal spine so that if the storm, for example, hits Galveston Bay, you can prevent that storm surge, which will back up water everywhere. Those are preventative type measures. As we move forward, as of September 1 in the city of Houston, we're not going to be guided by the 100 of the 5-year 100 floodplain. People will have to build higher starting September 1st.
Yeah.
There are some other changes that we will be making as a result relating to our codes and how we build in the city. All of these steps need to take place. And if you have put in place all of these mitigation measures, and the models indicate that homes or structures still would have flooded, then, of course, the buyout program is critically important.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of homes that are in harm's way where the buyout program should take effect.
On the other hand, though, there are residents and community members in those neighborhoods who are wondering if they all get bought out, that, you know, some of those long-standing historic, maybe majority-minority neighborhoods could also get wiped out.
But I'm very sensitive to that. I live in, I grew up in one of these low-income minority areas. I still live in the same community in which I was born and reared. We don't want gentrification. We don't want people to be displaced. And you can keep people in their communities if you put in place, take the mitigation steps to reduce the risk of flooding. And so you have to expand the bayous, the channels. You have to put in detention bases. And the county has taken the initiative. They took a bold step, which we all supported, to provide $2.5 billion in funding to help address a lot of these concerns.
Yeah.
And these dollars can be used to leverage additional dollars from the federal government. And when you combine that to what we call the Rebuild Houston program that is already in place, like a drainage fee, when you leverage these resources on top of one another, then we can certainly address the concerns of people living in these low-income areas, because that's critically important. They shouldn't have to just move out of their area or be displaced, because for many of these people, they don't have a lot of options.
Yeah. Mr. Mayor,
we need to make sure that we target resources in those areas to benefit them.
Mr. Mayor, forgive me. I don't mean to be rude in interrupting you. I'm just mindful of the time here. And there's two more quick things I want to ask you. One of them, let me just play a piece of tape here. This is from last year, August 29th. And Houston resident Shanika Cooper told the CBS Evening News that she followed your advice not to evacuate, but that floodwaters forced her out of her home anyway.
I feel like they should have been more prepared, because I watched the news from the day that they said the hurricane was in the water up until the water came in my house. And when the mayor said, don't leave, he didn't think it was going to be that bad. I'm like, okay, So, but after that, when they started coming in, I just knew it was a lie.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. Mayor Turner, I wanted to give you a chance to tell us a year later, sort of what's your view on evacuation and getting people out if they need to be?
People should not have evacuated. You cannot in a day or two evacuate 2.3 million people in Houston and another 4 million in Harris County. You cannot do that. And I think most people agree with that assessment. So even a year later, I'm as firm on that decision now as I was a year ago.
Okay.
Yeah, when evacuation took place in the city of Houston in 2005, Hurricane Rita, we lost about 120 people on the road because all of the roads were like a parking lot.
Yeah.
That would have happened here as well. So I'm not saying that there will never be an instance when you would not evacuate, but in this particular case, under the circumstances that were presented a year ago, no.
Right.
To have evacuated would have put more people in harm's way,
yeah,
and more people would have lost their lives.
So, Mayor Turner, one last question for you. You've been very generous with your time, and I'm very grateful. I mean, it's just that what's happening in Houston is so important, obviously for Houstonians, but for the whole nation, for us to learn from. So,
But I do want to emphasize, you know, that Houston has taken significant steps in bouncing back. So I don't want to give anybody the impression that we are way back to where we were a year ago. We've made significant steps. We are taking significant steps to build a stronger, more resilient region, okay? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we recognize that there are thousands of people who are still recovering, and we don't want to leave one person behind.
So that's that leads me to my last question for you. Mm-hmm. Give me your honest assessment, if you could. If Houston gets hit by another big storm this year, next year, what's going to happen?
Well, what's going to happen? We'll be stronger and we'll be more resilient. You never can predict what Mother Nature will do. And that's whether you're talking about Houston or you're talking about some city in New York or some city in California or forest fire. But you have to take steps to mitigate the risk of any natural disaster as much as you can. We do know in the last 3 years we've had 3 500-year floods. And so now we have to make sure that we are taking those steps to build a more resilient city. And so you have to expand your channels. You have to put in more detention bases. You have to do the effective buyout program. We need to make the investment for the coastal spine. As we build into the future, we've got to change the way we build, we develop. We have to build higher. We have to be smarter in our approach. And we have to be mindful that there are communities within our city where there are low-income individuals whose areas have been ignored or neglected for decades, and we need to address them.
Well,
equity in terms of building resiliency is very important.
Mayor Sylvester Turner, the mayor of Houston, Texas, first elected in 2016, joining us today from Houston. Mayor Turner, thank you so very much.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Jim Blackburn, let me turn back to you. You've just got a minute left. The mayor gave us a lot to think about there. But my question for you in the last minute that we have here, Professor Blackburn, is do you think the mayor has partners at the local, state, and federal level to achieve all that we've been talking about that Houston needs this over the course of this hour?
Well, I think it's different on different levels. I think locally we have a great partnership. I think we have great potential. I think the federal government actually has stepped up and done quite well. I mean, we've had the appropriations bill passed in February that sent a good bit of money into the community with the prospect of more to come. The state is the level that is missing. They're just missing in action totally. And if I had to give a report card, the state would get an absolute F. I think everybody else is trying hard and making progress. The state just is missing in action, and I'm really disappointed, particularly in the governor's office, for a lack of leadership both on climate as well as on financial assistance.
Yeah.
Which we've got a rainy day fund, and we couldn't get it for Harvey. I mean, just, you know, the irony escapes everyone, but or maybe doesn't escape anyone.
I mean, a rainy day fund, we're looking like we're going to need multiple hurricane funds for major cities like Houston
absolutely.
And around the country. Well, Jim Blackburn, director of the Severe Storm Prevention, Education, and Evacuation from Disaster Center and also a professor at Rice University, thank you so very much for your time today.
Thank you.
And listeners, we know that cities across the country are facing this, so go to onpointradio.org and let us know what you think your city needs to do to be climate ready. Again, that's onpointradio.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.